Welcome to Lack Live Radio on the Lacrosse Radio Network. This is Marissa and Jimmy from InLacrosseWeTrust.com here in episode 4 of this season of Lack Live Radio podcast. Technically, I think this is our 4th season with how many times we've stopped and started the show again, and it's a podcast now, but yeah, this is our season number 4. This week we're talking a lot more about the Baltimore Indoor Lacrosse League. We have some great guests. We have Julian Malachinsky, we have Ginny Capiccioni, and we have Ryan Wheeler, all from the league. All players who played up in Canada, played at the pro level, whether that be the NLL, Baltimore Bombers, the Can-Am League, places like that. So that's going to be an interesting conversation because, I mean, if you read the website, which I'm sure you do if you're listening to this, you know that I personally and a lot of the staff and a lot of our readers, obviously, are very interested in box lacrosse, American box lacrosse, and the differences between Canada and how it can work in the States, how it can emulate Canada or be different. So that's going to be some interesting discussion, so stay on and listen to that. If you're listening to this part, I'm sure you'll listen to the rest of it. So we're also going to, I'm going to talk a little bit about a few pieces of NLL news. There's been a few signings this Friday evening. Calgary's made a couple interesting signings I want to discuss. Toronto made some moves earlier in the week. Buffalo signed a few of their guys to extensions. New England made a move. Also, Philadelphia Wings could be returning, so we will discuss that. Also, a couple of news and notes from around Major League Lacrosse, including news about the Denver Outlaws. So, settle back, listen in. We're going to go to a quick commercial break. We'll come back with the 3 interviews. We'll come back after that and evaluate what we learned, and after that, just some pro wax talk. So, make sure you continue to listen in.
This is Curtis Knight of the Edmonton Rush, and you are listening to the Lacrosse Radio Network.
Back on Lax Live Radio on the Lacrosse Radio Network, here is Ginny Capiccioni talking about the Baltimore Indoor Lacrosse League. So, Ginny, can you tell me a little bit about the league, your role in it, and what it's like to play in the league?
The league, how you doing, Marissa? The league is about, I think it's the 29th season. So it's been around for a long time. My role in the league, I've kind of been the assistant commissioner for about 5 years. Been Cal Larry Fila. I also am a goaltender for Rebel. And
you've played in a lot of different lacrosse leagues. What's the main difference you find in playing a league like this compared to, like, you played for the Baltimore Bombers and stuff like that?
I think all the leagues are different. The NAL was certainly more American. This league is essentially why was so competitive. It's been a training league for, you know, the past 30 years. People would play it in the fall to get ready for the winter NLL or the MIL or whatever was current at the time. Last year or 2 years ago was the NAL. So it's pretty competitive as far as American amateur. I would say the Baltimore League, you know, and the Boston League are the only place you're going to find these levels. So, different from the CLA, and obviously there's a concrete factor and the rules are different. And there's, you know, something to be said with the teams. Like these teams, we only meet once a week, but the play is significantly high with the play, the personnel in it. So,
in a league like this, there's a lot of very experienced players. You see players like Jordan Hall who are in the NLL. And players who play in the North American Lacrosse League, but there are also some inexperienced field lacrosse players who might be new to the box game. What's it like playing in a league with those kind of circumstances?
I think that, you know, it's always it's a big question, how are you teaching Americans indoor lacrosse? The easiest way to do that is for them to be in an environment where 75-80% of the people already know how to play. As opposed to just starting box and trying to teach the, you know, entire population box. This is it's a lot easier to educate people. We're very talented field players, you know, crossing over how to learn box. We have a bunch of different standouts from the MLL and Team USA on our team, you know, Rebel, and they're not necessarily box players, but, you know, being shown a couple of different things, they're pretty significant on the field because you're just teaching them concepts as opposed to, you know, skill set. So
And you've played up in Canada before. I'm wondering, what's the difference of playing in an American-based league like the NHL or even the Baltimore League compared to the way the game's played up in Canada?
I played in Canada for a lot of years, and it's certainly different between the reserve, the Ontario, Quebec, and British Columbia. They have their own cultures, but it's nice to play at home because certainly you're friends with all these people. I've been friends with these people for a long time. Up there, it's also nice. It's very, very serious. You know, I've only played, obviously, senior in Canada, and a lot of these players have been playing, you know, since the novice level, like 7, 8 years old. So the city teams are, you know, very significant, very important to the location, and you know, the atmosphere, the training, and the coaches, you know, it reflects that. So, I mean, it's two different things. Like, there are, you know, things that's in Canada that are not present in the United States just because you're playing for 30 years. You just know different things. So some of the problems are just, you know, understanding the substitution, understanding higher-level concepts, and, you know, that's a common knowledge up in Canada. But that's essentially where I learned how to play, outside of the United States. So there's positives and negatives in both. You know, Larry does a great job in Baltimore, outstanding, works every day on it, like it's a full-time job, and he's really trying to grow American indoor lacrosse, and everyone's very fortunate to have that, you know, to be able to drive, you know, near your home and play that.
Last question here is, you started the Guardian National Tournament company last summer. Can you tell us a little bit about that company and what we can see coming soon?
Guardian National is both a training company, a national championship, similar to a skills combine for goaltending. Last year, we had over 100 goalies from North America come and compete in four components: athletic, offensive, reactionary, and virtual. It was very successful. We've just about finalized this year's national championship. It's going to happen at the end of July at Spooky X Sports again. So we're hoping to double in size. Breaking down a goalie position in, you know, four different sets, we're trying to, you know, educate goalies all together as opposed to just in one, saving the ball or just throwing the ball. So we're very happy with Guardian. I think the goaltending position in the United States and in lacrosse in general isn't as developed as in soccer and ice hockey because it's been around longer, and we're trying to increase the competency of goalies starting with the youth. So we're excited about it. Everybody's really passionate about it, and, you know, it's what I do, I enjoy it.
This is Kyle Sorensen, the Washington Stealth, and you're listening to the Lacrosse Radio Network.
Back on LAX Live Radio on the Lacrosse Radio Network, still talking Baltimore Indoor Lacrosse League with Julian Malicheski. Julian, welcome to the show.
Hi.
So, tell me a little bit about the Baltimore Indoor Lacrosse League and what it's like to play in the league.
It's definitely very competitive. I've been playing in it for over 5 years now, and I play with Team Rebel currently right now with Judy Capuzzoni and Ryan Wheeler. We're 4-0 right now. It's always new guys coming into the league, and, you know, it's a real quick learning curve, but, you know, the quality of play is, you know, it's a really high-level ball, so you're always getting good games.
And what is it like playing in a league where you have so many box lacrosse experienced players and also so many players who are new to the game?
I'm sorry, can you say that one more time?
You're playing in a league with a lot of very experienced box lacrosse players who have played at professional levels, yourself included. So what's it like to have that mix along with field lacrosse players who are newer to the box style?
Everyone is really willing to help out each other and learn the game and help teach it. And, you know, no one really has a big head out there because they're all quality levels of play out there. So, you know, we have all these kids that are, you know, quality D1 to D3 players, as well as, you know, experienced guys like myself, and, you know, other current team members and other guys that play on other teams. So, you know, we definitely have a good mix of players on all teams, so it's always good.
And you've played in a lot of box lacrosse leagues, such as the Ontario Senior B League, Can-Am, the North American Lacrosse League. What's the biggest difference between that level with the professional level and playing in a league like this? Do you find any major differences, or is it a lot the same with the style of play?
It's definitely apples and oranges. You know, the NALL is definitely different than playing in Canada. Canada is definitely its own animal in itself, and that's, you know, definitely a lot of the highest level of play. The Pro League's had a very high level of play as well, but it's just a completely different atmosphere. I feel like that's like one of the really, that's the biggest difference, is the environment in which each of the leagues were going in. But that's not to, you know, discount the bill at all. It definitely has, you know, a very high level of pace, and, you know, all the games are really high and competitive. But it's definitely just different kind of, it's just different altogether. You know, because a lot of these guys, when we go to Canada, these are guys that play this, you know, from when they were, you know, little kids. So they have just that completely different, you know, skill set. And, you know, it's their game, you know, everyone there up north. That's what they do. So they're really good at it, and, you know, you're always learning from them, and it's, you know, very blue collar. The NALL had a lot of those guys as well as some MLL guys and high level college guys, so that was an interesting mix, but it always seems to work out in terms of, like, everyone kind of knows their role and, you know, goes from there. And then this is kind of the same way. You know, we have guys that have been there for a while that know what they're talking about, and, you know, it's, you know, if you back up what you say and you're helpful and stuff like that, you know, it all works out.
And lastly, here now, like you mentioned earlier, Rebel is 4-0 to start the season. They're off to a great start. What do you think has worked for the team overall? I mean, it seems like a very competitive league this year.
Yeah, absolutely. The league's been getting more and more competitive each year. We've played together for a long time. There's a lot of guys that, you know, make up the core of the team, and then we have we had the addition of about 5 new players last year, and they all stayed on for this coming year, and we all just gelled really well. You know, we get along really well, and we have a lot of box experience, so that helps. And, you know, we've got Ginny in the cage, and, you know, that's, you know, can't really ask for too much more than that.
And Julian, thank you so much for calling in and joining the show tonight.
Thank you very much for having me.
Welcome back to LAX Live Radio here. You just heard a couple interviews here. We're going to come back with one more with Ryan Wheeler, and then we're going to talk a little bit more about some pro lacrosse happenings. One thing I want to discuss, we'll talk some roster news later because I do want to get to this, but if you're following lacrosse news, which if you're listening to this podcast, you probably do follow lacrosse news, there's a chance we might see the Philadelphia Wings come back. And I know, like, basically every time an NLL team folds or leaves, you hear someone say it's a suspended team and they're going to come back. I remember about 3 years ago now, I was hosting a show, this same show, except it was live, and I had George Daniel, the NLL commissioner, on. And I asked him, what's the state of the suspended teams like the Blazers and the Orlando Titans? And he's like, oh, they don't exist anymore. So that's what happens to suspended teams. They don't exist anymore. The Philadelphia Wings outright moved to Connecticut, where they are now the New England Black Wolves. And that's about it. And we've heard a few people say, oh, the league wants to go back to Philadelphia. But the Blazers left in 2011, and everyone said, oh, they want to go back to Boston. A couple years ago, they said they want to go back to Pittsburgh, and I've literally heard nothing. There's the Montreal rumors, obligatory Montreal rumors, every single year. So when you hear that, you kind of take it with a grain of salt of, okay, like, they want to go back to Philly. I think the league wants to go everywhere, too. So then you hear, or you see, NXT Sports, which is a company that does, like, they call themselves a lacrosse education company. They basically do camps and stuff like that. They send out a tweet, we're talking to the NLL about bringing a team back. That's pretty mind-blowing stuff, especially since I don't think people associate NXT as, like, a big-money company that would bring in a team. But so they're talking, and I don't think they'd tweet that if it wasn't true. And then we confirmed, and a few other media outlets did as well, with the league, they are talking to NXT, and several other teams, or several other avenues of for bringing a team back to Philadelphia. They want Disty. NLL does not want to be out of Philadelphia for very long, and it makes sense. It's been a successful market for so long, but it looks like 2016 could be a team. One thing I've pointed out writing a lot about is they've never made it explicitly clear that it would be a expansion team, because everyone wanted a team back in New England, and now you find out it's a relocation. I don't think anyone's as happy about it. So I don't think anyone's going to be very happy to see a team in Philadelphia at the expense of, like, Minnesota or a team that moves or something like that. So, but I've talked to a few people, and it sounds like it would be expansion, which would be terrific news because you'd be back up to 10 teams. So many more players would be in the league. And I'm actually writing a story just because I don't know when it's going to get out there. It's a ton of work. About what rosters would look like this year if there were 10 teams. Because it's interesting how many great players aren't in the league. Just look at the Canadian Lacrosse League and you see some players in there. You see a guy like Scott Evans in there. And you're just like, or like Gavin Prout even. And you're just like, wow, these guys were top NLL players and they can't crack a roster now. You see it all the time. So it's just interesting that Philadelphia might get a team back soon. If you are interested in the subject, want to talk about it or anything, you can always tweet at us at LacrosseWeTrust. We'll always get back to you. We'll write something up for you. We are the People's Lacrosse Media Outlet. So we're going to come back with a quick interview with Ryan Wheeler about the Baltimore Lacrosse League and then wrap it up and now talk about some NLL transaction notes.
This is Nick Rose of the Toronto Rock, and you're listening to the Lacrosse Radio Network.
Lacrosse Live Radio on the Lacrosse Radio Network with Ryan Wheeler talking some more about the Baltimore Indoor Lacrosse League. Ryan, can you tell me about your experience in the league and what it's like to play in a league like the Baltimore League?
This is actually my first year playing in the Bill. Although, of course, I've been aware of it for many years. It's sort of the foremost source of opportunity for DS1 players to play. The league obviously has been around coming close in on 3 decades now, so you've got some pretty legendary names that have come through the Bill over the decades and played in it. It's been great.
I mean, I was asking a few others on the show tonight about playing the league with so many experienced box lacrosse players, players who have played in the NLL, and then at the same time, some players who are just new to the league this year and it's their first experience with the indoor game. What is that like?
I think what the Bill serves for is a great opportunity for US-1 players in the Northeastern Corridor, Philly, New York, Baltimore, who haven't had a lot of indoor lacrosse experience during high school or college to get, at the very least, a taste of, or maybe just to sort of, you know, rub elbows with or rub shoulders with some guys who have that elite level experience from the NLL, and even a few people that have, had the opportunity to play up in Canada for a number of summers. So it's a great chance for those guys to be mentored by and have the experience of playing with those other players who have had that box lacrosse experience, because really there's nowhere else to get that right here in the States. We don't really have any functional box leagues outside of the Can-Am League.
Yes, that's very true, especially with the demise of the North American Lacrosse League and leagues like that. What's it like for you compared to level of play? What's it like playing in the Baltimore League compared to other levels of play you've played in?
The Baltimore League is great. I think what we have right now with the 14 is a real distillation of talent. So you've got some good young guys right out of college with some real substantial lacrosse pedigree, some MLL pedigree, some good Division I pedigree. You see some Bayhawks helmets out there. You see some Loyola helmets. You see some Charlotte Hounds helmets, UMBC and Towson. So you've got a good mix of these young guys who, although they might not be the most experienced box lacrosse players, certainly have substantial athleticism and young legs and good lacrosse pedigree. And then you mix that in with some of the older guard who have had an opportunity to be involved with the box game, and it makes for an exciting brand of ball and an enjoyable brand of ball. I myself am coming down every Tuesday night from Manhattan with Jimmy Cappuccioni, so we would not be investing the 19-hour round-trip experience if I didn't think it was well worth it.
season, it seems like the league has been so competitive. There's been a lot of tight games. It seems like all four teams have solid rosters. Can you talk a little bit about this season and what it's been like out there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, to piggyback off what I just said, because there's only four teams, it has, I think, increased the quality of play overall, so that every Tuesday when we're headed down there, we know we're going to get a great opponent. We're going to have, you know, a game on our hands every week, rather than maybe in some of the other leagues, if there was a bit more, you know, the situation was a little bit more watered down, where you would, you know, have maybe a little bit of a layup game or a gimme game, and you're kind of going down there, and you're not being tested to your fullest capacity. Certainly, that's, you know, not the case in the middle here. You're going to be in a match, you're going to be in a game, and you're going to have to play hard the entire time. And that's great, you know, because that's a good opportunity to play at that speed and to, you know, hone your skills and to increase your skill set, rather than going and, you know, winning a game 18-6 or something like that, which is, you know, in theory fun, but in practice, not really.
Well, Ryan, thank you very much for calling in this week. I really appreciate it.
Sure, no problem, Marissa. Thanks for having me.
Always good talking American indoor lacrosse with some really great players who, if there were more pro teams, I tell you, a lot of these players would be on them. And one of the reasons is shame to see the demise of some of these teams, but that's the way lacrosse works nowadays. So we are going to talk a little bit about some of these pro teams now with the NLL, of course. It's the offseason. The draft has come to an end. The signings are coming from that now. We're seeing a few more signings today that I find rather interesting, we'll get to. But training camps are coming mid-November, more to the end of November. I think New England is earliest, they're November 14th. But from there, there's going to be some December camps. They just announced Minnesota and Rochester playing a free game up in Rochester on December 6th. So that should be great. I'm sure they'll announce more games as they come. Typically, takes a while for them to announce some of this stuff. But I mentioned interesting signings. If you read any of the draft rankings on inlacrossewetrust.com, a lot of players entered late, including Casey Jackson from Burnaby. So Jackson, we prorated as the 11th overall prospect because he picked up late, actually. He actually messaged me and asked me to make sure I tweeted out stuff to make sure that GMs knew he was available, because there was some discrepancy, because I had him ranked last year. And it turned out he wasn't in that draft, so there was confusion about this year. And Jackson went undrafted, to the surprise of a lot of people, myself included. Well, now today, the Calgary Roughnecks, along with a former draft pick of theirs, Chad Cummings, they signed Jackson to a one-year deal. And Jackson, if I remember correctly, is a lefty, which is interesting because it seems like Calgary is trying to improve some of that forward depth. And Calgary's roster, as you probably know, is one of the deeper in the league. Their forwards, just listen to these top six, lefty and right. Jeff Schaffler, Dane Doby, Daryl Veltman, Sean Evans, Scott Ranger, Curtis Dixon. I mean, that's probably the best top six you can come up with in the league right now. And they recently signed Jordan McBride for the right side, so they have seven forwards now. A lot of teams have more forwards in this, and I know they're pretty set with who they're playing, but Jackson now fits on that left side potentially, so they have four on each side. So the move makes sense for them. Wondering if Jackson, what kind of opportunity he gets. I just found out kind of interesting. Other news, Toronto this week signed Brody Merrill to a three-year extension. For some reason, the NLL.com transaction page is saying four, but the press release said three, so we're going to go with three. That Toronto team sure looking good, especially on defense. Along with Brody Merrill being there, they added, of course, Brock Sorensen, Jeff Gilbert. They extended Damon Edwards. That looks like a really good team over there. They drafted two. They drafted pretty well. They took Darryl Robertson, who's going to be there. And some more moves they made. They signed Keegan Ball, who they drafted last year, and he was on a draft list all year, so they have him. They signed Eric Petrie and Dylan Webster, who was a undrafted free agent. And they also signed Hayden Smith away from Buffalo. So that was pretty interesting. Hayden Smith is a left transition guy, so on that Toronto team, he's going to be around playing with guys like Brody Merrill, Jesse Gamble, Jimmy Purves. I mean, a guy like Hayden Smith might end up on that practice roster. So that's kind of an interesting note. They added him. Wonder what kind of role he's going to have. Other moves, Buffalo signed extensions, 3-year extension for Dane Smith and for Ryan Benesch. So those guys are going to stay around for a while. They have an interest. I mean, I think Buffalo and maybe Minnesota have the biggest rosters going into camp. Or maybe it was Vancouver, not Minnesota. So you take a look at Buffalo's roster, and we have the depth chart up on our website. Go to inlacrossetrust.com, hover over the NLL tab, the little teams tab, and you can click any team, or go to the info tab and click on NLL depth charts. So taking a look at Buffalo right here, they're pretty deep. Their forward, left side of forward is ridiculous because they drafted all lefties, which I talked about a couple weeks ago. Dan Patterson had a story about that on the website. He's a Bandit speechwriter. But they have Benesch coming back for 3 years. They have John Tavares, which they already announced they are keeping. Sean Williams, who's an unrestricted free agent still. Presuming he's back, he's there. Chad Culp. They put Mitch Jones, who is also a hockey player, on the protected list. He probably won't play this year, and if he does, will be late in the year, kind of like 2014 season. And then they have a bunch of rookies. They have Mike Melnichenko, who I like a lot. Brandon Goodwin, who was a... They traded their 11th overall pick, or I believe the 9th overall pick, Rory Smith and Eric Penny to get that pick. So I'm pretty sure Goodwin's going to have a shot at that roster. And they drafted Tyler Ferreira and Jordan Dance. And I like Dance a lot after seeing him play in the Canadian League a bit this winter. On their right side, Mark Stenhouse, Joe Rezatares, Aaron Wilson, Jamie Rooney, and Corey Fowler. I don't know if Fowler will make that team, but he's actually a pretty good player, so I wouldn't be surprised if he did. And Rooney, I mean, I've seen Rooney play a lot when he was in Boston. He pretty much carried the Blazers late in that 2011 season, so I'm a big fan of his play. So that team's really, really deep. They have Dane Smith, right transition, a few other players there. I mean, Mitch Wild, I think he could become a very good player. They have David Brock over there. Left side, Andrew Watt. Joel Matthews, I think, is going to get a legitimate shot. They drafted Matthew Bennett, and they signed Marty Hill. They also signed Alex Keto-Hill, right transition, and Dan Patterson, once again, had a pretty interesting story about Keto-Hill on the website today, so you might want to check that out. Just some interesting stuff. A couple more quick one more note on Buffalo. They signed Jerome Thompson as well, so that should be an interesting move to watch. Two more teams I just want to kind of discuss a bit. Colorado Mammoth. They signed all of their draft picks, it seems like. They signed a lot of them in 2-year deals. Eli McLaughlin, Robert Hope, Alexis Bouquet, who all are going to contend to be on that roster at least, along with Zach Rogers, DJ Giacobobo, Terry Ellis, and Mike Crompton. They signed them all to 2-year deals. Rogers, interesting note on him, I believe the draft telecast actually talked about this. He's from Los Angeles. And Terry Ellis is from St. Louis and played for the University of Denver. And actually, our Die Miller had an article about Terry Ellis yesterday, which, again, is interesting, and you should read it, because he could be an interesting player for that team. Alexis Bouquet, too. I'm really interested in that situation, because Ty Belanger didn't play that great. The backup in Colorado, Dylan Ward, took over for him midway through the year, and Ward, they just signed him to a 5-year deal. They're committed to him. So I'm wondering if Belanger gets moved to a team that needs a goalie. And nowadays, it seems like teams carry 3 goalies almost always, so if they want to keep Belanger there, they can, and have Alexis Bouquet on the practice roster, though Bouquet looks good. I believe Adam Schutt with Edmonton actually got drafted higher than Bouquet, but Bouquet's pretty good. That's another situation in itself. Edmonton taking 2 goaltenders after they have Aaron Bold there after a fantastic year, and they traded for Tyler Carlton. So watch the situation at Edmonton as well. We're not going to get into that today, but it's interesting. And I just want to talk about Vancouver for a moment, because their roster really interests me, because it just seems like they have a lot going on there. They just traded for Eric Penny, and I've talked to Doug Walker a bit, their GM. I think they want Penny as their backup. Just a feeling I'm getting from that trade. They have Matt Roick and Neil Tyak there as well, of course, to compete. I absolutely love Rory Smith on that defense, because that defense had locked a bit of physicality, but it could be pretty good. They have Tyler Burton, who they got from Edmonton. He was on their practice roster last year, but he played a lot with Rochester. You probably know that name, so that's interesting. Chris O'Doherty and Kyle Sorensen are going to be back from injury as well. They signed Curtis Hodgson long-term. They have Matt Beers there. Tim Henderson's coming back. They drafted 2 guys, Fernandi and Brendan Cleland. And they really like Justin Saul and Justin Pichel as well. So watch that defense. It might actually be one of the better ones in the league. I don't think Vancouver has been known for their defense, but it could be pretty good. And in offense, of course, they made the most interesting move of the offseason, in my opinion, and that was in acquiring Johnny Paulus from Rochester. And Rochester's lucky they kept Stephen Keough, because if they lost him and Paulus, that offense would have been weird. But they have Paulus, and they're now on the left side of that offense, and that's a crowded left side of the offense. They have Cliff Smith, who's always been pretty good, Dane Stevens, who they got from Minnesota, along with the trade for Tyler Haas. And I get the feeling Stevens is probably going to play out there. He's been on the holdout list a couple times. They have Cody Bremner on that left side as well. I think they really want Bremner to step up this year. They spent a first-round pick on him last year. And, of course, your right side, I actually wrote a little bit about how their right offensive side looked a little bit weak going into the year. They have Reese Dutch, Tyler Digby, and it looks like they're going to play Joel McCready over there on the offensive side instead of transition like I thought. So it looks pretty good. They have Dan Keene and Matt Delmonico, who they drafted. So I think that right side of the offense is very dependent on those rookies. And Keene, they got a steal getting him late, so that's very interesting to watch. I'm wondering what happened to Lewis Ratcliffe this preseason. I think Ratcliffe is... He's been one of my favorite players to watch in the NLL. I wrote about that a lot. I'm interested in how much time he gets with the ball compared to Johnny Paulus on that same side. How much time they have those two guys on with Reese Dutch. And going to wrap things up in a couple minutes here. I want to discuss quickly, though, something interesting that I just love. The Denver Broncos NFL team are playing San Francisco 49ers on October 19th. That's next week. And it's on Sunday Night Football on NBC. And they're going to honor the Denver Outlaws, who won MLL Championship. So that's absolutely terrific, I think. They're scrimmaging the Denver Pioneers team on October 18th. So they're going to be around, all the players and everything. So they're going to have a chance to honor them at that Broncos game. I'm just hoping they televise it, because they show stuff like that sometimes on Sunday Night Football. But that's a great thing, to get recognition like that. So we're going to end it on a good note, because not enough lacrosse news ends on a good note. But thank you again for listening to LAC Live Radio on the Lacrosse Radio Network. Big things coming. I know I say this every week, but I swear, we're going to have some cool programs coming up. We just, in LAC, just hired some good writers. We added Ryan Conwell, who used to write for The Whistle. We have Damon Gray covering New England area lacrosse. We added Jack Hawkins, who's covering United Kingdom lacrosse. They actually have a collegiate league. There's like 64 teams there. It's really cool. So we're going to cover that, and have a lot of the coverage for that is going to be kind of similar to the Canadian University Field Lacrosse Association. So just cool content for you to check out. So make sure you're reading the website every single day for the best lacrosse news. Random podcasts show up sometimes. And video content. There's always video content. So thank you for listening.